episode of Book Hype. This week, we're going to talk about These Broken Stars by Megan Spooner and Amy Kaufman. And everyone is here tonight. I think this is only the second time this has happened since we started back in the new year. So hello, everyone.
Hey.
Hi.
All right. So let's get started on what we've been reading this week, because actually it's been 2 weeks. We had a little break there. So what has everyone been reading? Kyle, do you want to start?
Yes, I started reading Illusion and rereading Night Circus. So Illusion is about this kind of like virtual world that someone has created where like people can wear this headband and this like these goggles and stuff, and they can enter this world where like they can do anything they want without having to worry about the consequences. And it's about this girl being best friends with the guy of the person who created it, but she's kind of like, there's something going on in the world of Illusion and something's happening, and so she's trying to figure out what's happening. That's like the weirdest like synopsis ever. I'm terrible at synopsises, but it's really good.
Okay, and Karen, why don't you go, because there was a little a little Twitter memo, or was it in our Facebook group, about how many books you've read, which I'm super excited for.
I know, it's weird though, because I felt like I read like 10 books in the last 2 weeks, and it's like 3 and I'm finishing up the 4th one. Well, I guess to be 5 because of These Broken Stars. But first of all, I finished Insurgent.
Yay!
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of it, but I finished it. That's the important thing. I also read Shovel Ready by Adam Sternberg, which was actually really good. It's a really different kind of post-apocalyptic story where there was a dirty bomb that was set off in the middle of New York City, and this is kind of like the aftermath, and there's this hitman, he's the main character, and you kind of follow him as he goes on one of his jobs. And the book is really, it's written really differently. Like most of the sentences, most of the paragraphs are one sentence, and so it moves really fast, and there's no quotations around the dialogue, so you kind of have to guess at who's talking, but it really kind of puts you right into the pace of the book, and everything moves super fast. I really enjoyed it. And then I finished Wildwood by Colin Molloy, and that is a 15 to 16 hour audiobook, and I actually got it for free at, where was that, Jen? Was that New York Comic Con when we did that spin? Or was that BEA?
I think it was BEA.
Oh, wow. I've had that for a while then. Well, I finally finished it, and that was just a really weird book. Like, The Chronicles of Narnia meets The Labyrinth meets Wizard of Oz, and it was really beautifully written, but I'm not so sure about some of the decisions the adults made in the book, so that was just kind of an okay read. I probably won't read the sequel. And I'm almost done with The Land of Stories by Chris Colfer, which I'm also listening to on audiobook, and is really good because he's an excellent narrator.
Awesome. And, Mikal, what have you been listening to? What have you been reading?
I've been listening to your guys' lovely voices. but I just... what am I in the middle of, actually? I'm in the middle of The Unbound by Victoria Schwab, which is the sequel to The Archived, which came out last year. And it's really interesting and kind of trippy, and it's really intense. I kind of like it. And at the same time, I am and will be for a very long time reading the second book in the Mistborn trilogy, which is called, like, The Well of Ascension or something. I don't remember. It's upstairs where I keep my books, and I'm going to keep going back to that in between all the other books that I have to read. Yeah, that's what I'm reading.
Okay, and Marima, what have you been reading? I know you're on vacation, so did you get any reading time in?
Not heaps. I got a lot of book buying time in, so I've got plenty of things to read. But I go through a couple of things. I just read This Song Will Save Your Life by Layla Sales.
I love that book.
Yeah, it's you know, I mean, I have to say, like, the PSA was a little heavy-handed for me, but yeah. You know, I think it's a sweet book. It's well written. It's about a girl who is kind of ostracized from her high school, and she ends up being a DJ at this underground club, and like shenanigans ensue. So it's cute, short. You know, I would recommend it. I also just read An Object of Beauty by Steve Martin, the comedian, and it's like about this woman who is like works in the art world in Manhattan, and it's very funny. I guess that's more of a, like an adult book. But yeah, that's really fun. So, you know, if you're a fan of Steve Martin, you might enjoy that. And I have just read Wolf Hall by Hilary Mantel, which is another adult book. It actually won the Man Booker Prize, I think, let me check, 2009. And the Booker Prize is like one of the most prestigious awards in adult like literary fiction. So that is a historical kind of fictional biography, I guess, set around the time of Henry VIII, and it's really, really good, but it's really, really big, so it's a bit of an undertaking, but, you know, if you're into that, I would recommend it. And what else did I read? Oh, I read, I have this thing about, like, you guys know I like nonfiction, but I love the Beatles, and I love reading like autobiographies of people that kind of worked around the time of the Beatles or worked with the Beatles. So I just read this one by Tony Barrow. It's called John, Paul, George, Ringo and Me. And he was like their press agent, sort of. So it's really interesting if you're like interested in that. And I have just started More Than This by Patrick Ness, which is really cool. I like him a lot, and I just picked this up while I was traveling. And it's about this kid who drowns, and then he kind of wakes up in this street, and he thinks that he's in hell. And like, I'm not that far into it, but yeah, it's really interesting. I like his writing style a lot, so I will report back on that one.
Okay, awesome. For someone who didn't read very much, you got kind of got a lot done, I'm just saying.
Well, like, I don't know, I didn't feel like that much because I was so relaxed.
See, that's the key, evidently. Obviously. Yeah. All right, so
you're probably also not drowning in snow. So
that's... I mean, like, we had a heat wave that set everything in the country on fire. So, like, I'm not going to do a weather comparison with you. But
I prefer that.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't. Yeah, I think the thing is, like, when you're, you know, when you're like on vacation and you're traveling and you have so much free time, then you're like, I should be reading. I should be spending more of this time reading. So, yeah, I think that's why it didn't feel like it was so much, because I could have done a lot more reading. But you know what? I just didn't do that. So that's fine.
Okay. So for me, I only got a couple things done because I needed to read These Broken Stars. I hadn't read it yet. So I read that. And then I read a book, I think it's more of a middle grade book, and it's called The Forbidden Library, and it's by Django Wexler. And it's about this girl whose father is killed in a shipwreck, and she goes to live with a very eccentric old uncle, and he has a massive library, but she's not allowed to go in it. And one day she meets a cat that can actually speak, and the cat sneaks her into the library, where she meets a very interesting boy who dares her to open a book and read from it. And as soon as she does, she enters into the book, and in order to become out of the book, she has to defeat the creature that's in the book. So it's this really cool story about basically about books and living inside different books, and how she's like a reader with a capital R, like that's her like title, and she can do amazing things within a book because she's a reader and is able to go into the books. So it was really cool. I really liked that a lot. It was very enjoyable. And I also just got another book by Patrick Ness, oddly enough, and it's called The Crane Wife. It's one of his first adult books. So it's this really cool storytelling about, it's a Japanese folklore kind of thing. So I've only just gotten into it, but it's really interesting. I like it quite a bit, so I will get back to you on how that turns out. But I do really like his writing style.
Oh, fun. I might have to check that one out, too.
Yeah, I'm not sure if it's out here yet. It might already be out in Australia, but I don't think it's out here yet, because I just had it sent to me. So you might have it before us, but yeah, it's really interesting so far. And I like that it's based on a folklore that everyone, you know, kind of has an idea about, so it's really cool.
Fun.
Yes, very. So let's do our book bite topic of the week. And this book bite topic comes from a listener, and this is from Laura. And her book bite topic was, what is the first series you guys got hooked on? So can you guys think of a series that you got hooked on? What was the first one? Kyle, you want to go first?
Okay. So, well, technically, the first series I got hooked on was Harry Potter.
I knew that was coming.
I mean, yeah. Other than that, I think the first series I got hooked on was Percy Jackson that like I got like really hooked on. I've read other series before, but I wouldn't say I got hooked on them because I read them. I was like, oh, that's cool. I guess I'll read the other one, but I'm not like a huge fan. Like, I got hooked on Percy Jackson. So it was Harry Potter and Percy Jackson.
Okay, how about Karen?
Yeah, I'm going to have to say Harry Potter too. That's kind of the first series that I remember being completely obsessed with. And then, of course, there's the Lost Years of Merlin series, which I talk about all the time. But there's another one that I don't think I've mentioned before. It's called Everworld. I don't know if any of you guys have ever heard of it, but I remember reading it quite a long time ago when I was in middle school. And it's about, I think, like Norse mythology, and it's really creepy, and it's got like Loki and like all of those kind of gods and monsters in it. And I really want to reread the series because I remember struggling with it a lot when I was younger, but I also remember really, really enjoying it.
Awesome. And McCall, what do you have?
I mean, aside from like the, you know, oh God, I read so many of those like little series about like girls who did gymnastics and girls who did ballet and girls who saved animals. And I mean, my house is still literally full of them. The Babysitter's Club, all of those things. But definitely, I think Harry Potter was the first thing I was really obsessed with and that I kind of, you know, with kind of intellectual interest as well. Oh, and there was also, did anybody read the Young Jedi Apprentice series? It was this series of little Star Wars novels that came out like after, I guess, you know, whatever movie, the prequels that shall not be named. And it was about young Obi-Wan Kenobi and Qui-Gon Jinn and their like adventures. And that was like mega feel territory for me. And I think that was actually around the same time as Harry Potter. So maybe that's kind of a tie. But in terms of, you know, the one that made the biggest impact, it was obviously, without question, Harry Potter.
Merma?
I think for me it was Lord of the Rings. I read The Hobbit. The Hobbit was probably the first book I really fell in love with, I guess. I think we've talked about this before. And once I read The Hobbit, I was like, I have to know more about this world and about these characters. So I read Lord of the Rings when I was very, very young. And even though I didn't probably understand all of it, I guess I got enough out of it that I really loved it. And I started reading all of the companion books like the Silmarillion and the Unfinished Tales and all of those things that were set in Middle Earth to kind of know everything I could know about it. And then I went back and read Lord of the Rings many, many times until finally I think I got to an age where like I could actually process everything that was happening in it. So I think Lord of the Rings was for me because that was before Harry Potter for me. And then I suppose, obviously Harry Potter. And then the other two that come to mind was his Dark Materials series. I read a lot of like fantasy series when I was, I mean, I still do, but I read a lot of them when I was younger. So there was His Dark Materials by Philip Pullman, which again, I was like, I still am. I love that series and I was really obsessed with. And there was this other fantasy trilogy by William Nicholson. It's the Wind on Fire trilogy, and it's like The Wind Singer is the first book. I don't really know how to describe it, but it's,
oh my
it's
God. Very cool.
Yeah. Has anyone else read them?
I read the first one. That was like the trippiest book I've ever read.
Right. It's weird, but it's very cool, and it has some cool sort of mythology behind it that is built into it. And
Can't Stop the Czars, right? That's what. That's
yeah. familiar. Yeah, exactly. So, I would recommend that. And then I'm just going on forever. But the other one from when I was, younger that I got hooked on was The Mortal Engines is what it's called. And sorry, I'm looking at my bookshelf. It's by Philip Reeves. And it's like a steampunk quartet of books. And they are really cool as well. And I read a lot of them. But yeah, Lord of the Rings was the first one for me.
Awesome. I don't know if I really, like, I'm trying to think of when I was younger and they had series, but they weren't the same as what you get in books now. Like, it was, like, Babysitter's Club and Sweet Valley High and, like, stuff like that that isn't really, you know, high art, shall we say. But I would read them.
Which member of the Babysitter's Club were you? I have to ask.
I honestly don't know. I didn't put myself in anyone's shoes.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I was Marianne, just saying.
I was too. Oh my god. I love the Babysitter's Club.
I never read the Babysitter's Club. I feel like I missed out.
Oh, I love it.
I look back on it now, though, and I'm like, oh my god, they were 13. They had, like, a business.
Hey, some people are just very entrepreneurial in that way. I don't know.
Yeah, not me.
No, me either. So I don't know. Like, it was really hard. Like, there wasn't a lot. Like, there is, like, today there's so much more to choose from. So it was kind of that. And then, of course, I read Harry Potter. I didn't, and this is probably going to be, like, sacrilegious. I didn't read it originally when it came out. I have younger sisters, like, much younger sisters. And they were the ones who were like, oh, my God, you have to read this. And I'm like, huh? And so that's kind of how I got into it, was through my sisters. And then, of course, I was hooked like everybody else, but it wasn't the same for me because I wasn't quite in that age bracket, I guess. So those, like, Harry Potter kind of got me back into everything again, and then I just didn't stop. I kept reading like crazy. So that kind of sums it up for me. But listeners, if you have a series that absolutely got you into reading or that you got hooked on, definitely share that with us in the comments, because I'm always curious to know what everyone kind of read and got into, because there's so many things out there that, you know, as a reader you miss. You can't read every book there is, so I'd be curious to see what other people's choices are. All right, so let's get started on this discussion, because it could be a long one. We'll see. So we're going to discuss These Broken Stars by Megan Spooner and Amy Kaufman. It is the first in a trilogy of books, and the books aren't going to be your traditional trilogy. They're going to be a companion series, which means that each set of books will be told from different people's perspectives. So from what I gather, there will be a couple in every book. It won't be the same couple, which is kind of odd, because when I read this first one, I wasn't aware of that. And then I got to the end and I was like, oh, and then I found out and I was like, hey, wait a minute now. Because I felt like there was so much more story for them to be told. So, but we'll get to that part. So, initial reactions. Is this a buy or a borrow for you guys?
For me, it's a buy. I loved it so much. Like, I'm so glad I saw someone suggest it in our comments. Because someone suggested it in the comments for Book Hype a couple weeks ago. And it's like, oh yeah, like, I'll take a look. And definite buy. I loved the book so much.
What was it about it that you loved? Give us details.
Well, the fact, okay, so I love Titanic. I love space, and I love, like, the Victorian era. And, like, the fact that the Icarus is a ship in space that's themed to, like, the Victorian era, because apparently everyone is dressed in old-timey clothes, it's just, like, amazing. So, like, I just loved every little bit of that.
Okay. Nicole, what did you think? Borrow or buy?
Paperback buy for me, unless you're a fan of romance. If you're a fan of romance, then go for it. Get it in hardcover. You'll probably read it a million times. For somebody like me, without a soul, I found it a little bit grating. But there were things about it that I liked.
Okay, Karen?
I loved it. I would absolutely buy it. I thought it was a fantastic book, which is kind of surprising because when Kyle first suggested it, I went and I read the blurb on Goodreads about it, and I was like, I don't know about this. It really doesn't, like, grab me at all. And then I started reading it, and I just completely fell in love with it. I thought the writing was beautiful, and the pacing was perfect, and the romance, which, you know, I don't mind the romance aspect of it, but I think, you know, after you've been reading so much about that sort of thing, it kind of gets old. But this felt really fresh and new, and I thought they did it really well, so I would definitely suggest to buy it.
And Merima?
I would have to go with Michal and say paperback, buy, or borrow. And yeah, I didn't know that what you just said about how they're companion books. And for me, that sort of downgrades it a little bit because when I was reading this, I felt like by the time I got to the end that a lot of this book would sort of hang on what would happen in the next book. And now I know there isn't really a next book. I'm a little bit more disappointed, I think, in the story than I was when I thought it was going to be expanded a bit more. But yeah, if you like romance, you know, there were a lot of tropes at work in this book, and I don't mean that necessarily in a bad way. They were used in different ways, but, you know, star-crossed lovers, et cetera, like rich girl, poor boy, all of those things. If you like that, I think you'll like this. It's a well-written book. It does what it sets out to do, but I was wanting more from it.
See, it's interesting that you say that, Marama, because that it actually made me slightly more interested in the sequel. I probably won't read it, but the fact that it's going to be different characters gives me a little more interest, I guess, because, I mean, it seemed interesting, like, what's going on in the colonies? Why are there all these rebellions? Like, that does seem vaguely interesting to me, and since that's what the sequel's about, and since I've had it up to here with Carver and Tarver and Lilac, again, not in, like, a, oh my god, they're horrible characters way, but in just a way that I like, I read the book, and it's a little much with all the lovey-dovey stuff. But since it's new characters, I don't know, it strikes me as a little more interesting.
Well, we'll have to agree to disagree.
No, I'm right.
Okay, nope. My turn. Oh, boy. For me, I think this book could be a buy. And because it is incredibly well written, whether you love the romance in it or not, I didn't think the romance was too heavy-handed. I've read star-crossed lovers that have gone drastically off the deep end, and I don't necessarily think that this book did that. I think it's well-written. It's very beautiful in the way it's written. And it's interesting. It's different. It's not your typical, oh, they can't have each other and they're stuck in this place. The thing I think I found most interesting about the book is it's legitimately, through the majority of the story, you only have these two characters. So the only thing that there is for interaction is them. And I think you learn a lot through that rather than having all these outside influences on who they are and what they're doing. It's strictly just them and how they choose to behave. So for me, I thought that was a really interesting take on it, whereas usually you have all these other things going on and you didn't. You had survival and you had how they were going to work it out. And so I thought that was a really cool approach. And I love the idea that they're terraforming new places and that there's certain things and that this place was really unknown. So I enjoyed that aspect of it as well. I thought it took a really cool approach to it. So that's kind of where I stand on it. I'm not so sure I'm sold on the being from different people's point of view, but again, we can talk about that later. I get off task so easily. So let's talk about the characters, which were basically Tarver and Lilac. So we can start with Lilac. Who wants to talk about Lilac first? What did you guys think about her?
I will, because I think I have an unpopular opinion. I really, really liked Lilac, and I'm kind of surprised by that, because when we first meet her, I was like, oh, great, you know, she's going to be really stuck up, and she's going to be like one of those girls. And you kind of figure as the story goes on, she's going to change, and she has an arc. But I think what they did so well with her is that they layered her and made her really interesting because, yeah, she was kind of stuck up, but she was also born into this world where she literally had to be that way to kind of survive and to make the people that she cared about survive. And that's why she kept pushing the guys away and stuff like that. But she was also really smart and she knew things that people of her class, especially girls of her class, shouldn't have known. And I think that made her really dynamic. And of course, you know, that becomes kind of a plot point because she ends up saving their lives. And so I think they did a really good job of kind of balancing those two sides of her and making her kind of like a real person that really jumps off the page, somebody that you can like, but maybe gets under your skin a little bit. But then, of course, you know, she changes for the better.
I kind of agree with Karen, I have to say. This is not the first time that this has happened. Let's not pretend like it is.
Last time you said Karen agreed with you, and you were adamant about that. I think it's
well,
the first time.
I am always right.
I do remember
anyway,
that.
Can I talk about Lilac? I liked her. I could have done without the mentions every like four sentences about how she was so beautiful, but that aside, I totally agree. They layered her very well from the start. So her arc was not as straightforward as it could have been, and it wasn't like a simplistic change. You know, she goes back and forth a bit, and you know, obviously, like, yeah, she's annoying at times, and I think that's fine. And I like that they didn't sort of shy away from that, that they weren't trying to make her this like perfect dream girl who, you know, is like kind of stuck up and then sees the error of her ways when she falls for this guy from the other side of the world or whatever. Like, you know, that is very, that I found that incredibly grating. So she, yeah, like she was annoying. And you know what? Like, I think that's fine. It's okay to complain in a situation like this. I would complain too. So yeah, I found her to be a lot deeper emotionally than I think I initially thought I would when I started the book. And yeah, obviously when you're spending the majority of the book with only two characters, it's a good thing if you can sort of empathize with them. And I definitely could with her.
Go ahead, Jen.
I was just going to say, I agree with Karen, because I think what they did so well is in the beginning they established that the fact that she wasn't just this pretty little rich girl, that there was much more to her world, and there was a reason she pushed people away, and they kind of laid that out really clearly and really nicely, so that you got that she wasn't just doing this to be a nasty rich girl, because that's what rich girls should do, that she had purpose and meaning, and that she did have skills, but she never let anyone really see that because of her father and what he was capable of. And so I agree with both of you. I think that she had a lot going on and that she was enjoyable, even if at times she was, you know, a bit annoying, which I think is good because it balances out the character. You don't want a character who's always perfect and you don't want a character who's always annoying. You have to have this balance in order to make her relatable. And I think that came across really well.
I enjoyed her most when she was being annoying. Maybe that's weird, but like, I liked that she, I agree she was emotionally layered. I think a lot of those things kind of, once we kind of got to the root of them, felt a little hollow to me. Like the whole thing about her father being obsessively protective of her. Like I imagined in my head as I was reading this, like she kept mentioning this guy Simon. So what I thought had happened was that Simon was like, you know, her first love, but he actually had bad intentions. And so her father has a reason to keep her away from other guys. Instead, it turns out to just be this like weird, scary, possessive, like insanity that kind of weakened the overall arc for me. But I liked it when she was being a nasty rich girl. I mean, not nasty necessarily, but like I felt like that was the most realistic part of her. You know, when she was like, I'm not taking off my shoes, I'm not taking off my dress, I'm not eating that, you know. I just really I found that relatable, and as great as she was, and I'm glad that she had, you know, the mechanical skills and all that agency, like that kind of, it, I couldn't connect to it as much.
I like how you said that the like the possessive father, you said it kind of downgraded the story a little bit for you, McCall.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it made it better, because I just, because it wasn't just like she is being this way for no reason and like she's just being bratty and stupid. Like she's thinking about how, like, even if she wants something, she can't get at it because her dad's getting in the way. And like, I like that, because it deepens her character. Like, no matter how much she would have liked to be with Tarver at the beginning and like liked to like cuddle up with him and not like say a word, and like how she even wants to like sleep outside of the pod or have him sleep outside of the pod, like I like that, because it goes to show that this isn't just some like stereotypical, oh, I love you and I want to spend all my life with you and like this is Titanic and we just met and let's have sex and blah, blah, blah. Like I like that her father is kind of the force behind her, not so for Tarver at the beginning.
Oh, no. I mean, I didn't mind the function that he served, but the reason behind it really didn't work for me. Like, so he literally never, ever wants her to be in a relationship or get married, ever.
Mm. No, there's more. That's not what I think. I think that he doesn't want her. He wants to use her basically like a princess and to like make arranged marriages for her that are going to his needs. It's like not about that you can never have a boy. It's about you will have the boy that I choose because it's going to further what I want to do.
So he'll like literally assassinate anybody who talks to her.
Yeah, I'm kind of with Michal on this. I think one of the problems with having a book that's so focused on two characters and not having anyone else around for like 80% of it is that you sort of don't develop any of the side characters. And the father was definitely a victim to that. Like, he just felt like a caricature to me. And I think the overprotective father was definitely one of the tropes that did not work for me in this because, yeah, like Mikhail said, it's like an unreasonable degree, his protectiveness. And yeah, it just makes it seem sort of like a cartoon villain, which is never a good thing. So, while I can understand her reactions to it, the reasoning behind his actions wasn't super valid, I think, in my reading of it. I would have liked something a bit, I don't know, more complex or like anything, just something else.
That's what I'm saying, like why I thought her first, you know, experience with love had gone really badly, you know, so that would have given him a reason instead of just being like, oh, she has interest in a male. Oh no, I shall assassinate him.
Yeah, or even if they had played up more the fact that it was like just the two of them, that it was just him and her and he was so scared of losing her or, you know, something along those lines where he was so protective to the point where he was like trying to protect himself from having to give her up. That would have made more sense to me. You know, at the end where she's saying to him like, oh, you'll never see me again, part of me was thinking, well, I mean, why would that matter to him? Because you haven't really shown me anything to prove that he has actually real affection for her and not that he is just using her, like Jen said, as kind of a pawn to marry off to whoever or you know, something along those lines.
Okay, so what did you guys, does anyone have anything else about Lilac?
No. I really did like, you know, the parts when she was like clearly over her head in the survivalist bits. I thought that played really well, and I thought she played off of Carver really Tarver really well in those.
Okay, so let's talk about Tarver. What did you guys think of Tarver kind of as this young war hero, I guess, in a lot of ways? What did you guys think about him?
I wanted to know more about like his war hero status and like why he was suddenly like off of the field and now like prancing around on like the ship and stuff. And I feel like he knew a lot and like I liked his character a lot, but I feel like there's just so much to him that he's still kind of empty to me. And I think I would have like Lilac in comparison, I feel had more of a story arc and she developed more. Whereas Tarver kind of was always this military guy doing this and this. And like the only development he really had was like, oh yeah, like I actually do like this girl. And like, I just wish I knew more about him.
I completely agree. I feel like although he was layered, he wasn't nearly as layered as Lilac, which kind of makes sense because his character was infinitely less annoying than hers was. So I don't think that was like a necessity, but I wanted to know more about him too. And I do think he was interesting, but if we had gotten maybe some more background, then I think it would have been a little bit easier to connect to him.
Yeah, I was kind of on the same page, although I think for me when I was reading it, I was feeling like they were trying to set him up too much to be like this hunky dream boy that like all the fangirls will want to, you know, write fan fiction about and blah, blah, blah. He wasn't anywhere near as layered and he was far too like perfect as a character that, yeah, I was kind of annoyed about the way he reacted to some things because it didn't seem normal. Like he was far too sort of calm about everything, and the reason that I liked that Lilac was, you know, annoying at times, she was completely annoying, is because it felt real. And him just kind of being this like solid military dreamboat type was less interesting to me because there didn't feel like there was much to his character except for him to be the balance to Lilacs, I guess.
Yeah, I think it was hard because when you're, you know, you're crashing a ship, you have these two characters, one of them has skills, the other one has none. So the one that doesn't have the skills is clearly going to have the most room to grow, whereas the one that has the skills and is capable isn't going to have as much to play with. Do you know what I mean? And that definitely kind of came across. Well, I think he was enjoyable and he, you know, he was well written. I'm not sure there was nearly enough there to keep him in balance with Lilac as she progressed through the story.
Yeah, I totally agree. And you know what, like, because Lilac had such a huge growth arc in regards to, like, dealing with the situation, even just physically, he needed an emotional one to match that, and they just didn't give it to him. And I would have liked to see something maybe more with his brother, because all of the interactions that he had sort of with his brother were really interesting to me. And that whole thing about how he had to get home to his parents because, like, he couldn't do this to his parents again, that was interesting, but it wasn't played up enough. Nearly enough.
Exactly.
Yeah, it just wasn't enough of it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the emotions that came from him at the end, that was something I wanted to see throughout when he was really struggling with what was going on at the very end. And then it sort of just kind of like the book ended there. And that was kind of sad for me because I felt like that was when we saw him at the most vulnerable and we learned the most about him.
I think that's right.
I liked Tarver.
Not enough to remember what his name was, obviously.
I think I enjoyed his parts more than I did Lilac's until they like kind of got together. And then maybe it is just like the fact that you're kind of in this bubble with them, but like at a certain point in the book, all they are thinking about is each other. And it's just chapter after chapter of, like, each other. That's it. And that got kind of frustrating to me. But I liked Tarver when he was like, yeah, okay, so this is what we're going to do. I have a plan. Crazy girl. Whatever. Try not to get under my skin. Like, that kind of worked for me. I agree he was maybe too nice to her and too tolerant of her lilac-ness. Maybe to be realistic, but I don't know. I mean, I found his chapters enjoyable to read, like just as a reading, you know, experience.
Now that we've established character, let's talk about the setting a little bit, because the setting kind of plays a really key role into this unraveling of the story. First, we have this ship, which is called the Icarus.
Yeah.
Which...
Okay.
Well, yeah. This okay, is not Karen. Cool. Okay, Karen. It's all over now, Karen. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Do not name your starship the Icarus. That is the stupidest thing you could ever do.
Yeah.
This just annoys me to no end. And I get, like, it's nothing against the authors or anything. Like, I get why, you know, they did that and everything. But just, like, this guy, you know, her father or whatever, naming it Icarus is just so dumb.
That's what I mean. Like, he does things like this, and you're just like, this guy is an idiot. Yeah. Oh, like, you know what I mean? It's, I mean, I know they did it so they could get in that line about the hubris, which was the very good line.
It really was.
At the same time, you're like, seriously, did no one mention this to him before?
Right, like, at a certain point, it's like, that's not intimidating, especially to us who've never met him. It's just stupid, right? Like from his perspective. Yeah.
I think it was meant to kind of show that the father had no, like, his ego was that big. He really truly felt he could call a ship the Icarus and it would be fine. Do you know what I mean? Like, I think
if he called it the Icarus 2 or something, that would have been maybe.
It didn't work out for Titanic 2 either. So.
No, because like it's the second Icarus or whatever, so it's not going to have the same ending as the first one, but.
So I actually kind of have a question about this, and I don't know if it was ever implied, like maybe I'm thinking it is, but one of the reasons why I thought maybe he named it the Icarus was because he wanted it to crash. I don't know. I mean, obviously his daughter was on it, but like at this point, I don't trust this guy, and I think he would do anything, maybe even like kill his own daughter. But then again, what would be the point of having the Icarus crash? Like, there's not enough information to really know the answer to that question, but did anyone else feel like maybe it was on purpose?
Well, I mean, I felt like there was definitely the possibility of it because they kept talking about how there were too many coincidences, that it couldn't be a coincidence, that it had crashed here and it had dropped out of hyperspace here. And meanwhile, every time they say hyperspace, I just think of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I don't know if that's just me and like everyone turning into a knitted version of themselves. So that's fine. But yeah, I don't know. This was my major issue with this book, and that is that I felt like by the time I got to the end, there were so many unanswered questions that I was looking forward to the next one to see how they were addressed. And now I know that they're kind of not going to be addressed. That bothers me because, yeah, I maybe I missed it too, but I kind of didn't feel like there was a definitive answer to that either.
No, I feel like there was so much more to talk about. Like, what right. were the beings that were, like, what is Lilac's future? Is she safe now? Is she not? Like, how does that work? Why was that planet the way it was? What was that planet? Was it Earth? Because there were a couple times I really felt like it was. Like, there was so much that wasn't addressed that could have been.
Yes,
so I
and
don't
I was
know.
Expecting it to be addressed in a sequel.
I know.
Like, before I knew, I was expecting, like, okay, this first book is going to be all, like, star-crossed lovers, that's fine, and then they're together at the end of the book, and then in the next book, it's going to be, like, the expansion of the world and, like, addressing all of these things and maybe going back to the mystery of, like, well, did it crash on purpose? Or, like, why did it crash? And blah, blah, blah. And now just, I guess, they're not going to do that, so I don't know.
I don't know. I think those answers are still going to be, like, those questions are still going to be answered because, like, the tagline for this entire series is three worlds, three love stories, one enemy. And so, like, something combined, like, is there's something there that combines all of these stories. And I think it might be Lilac's father. Like, he's the enemy.
Yeah. I mean, I understand what you're saying, but, like, I'm not interested in reading about two other couples who are going through, like, relationship drama just to get to the answers of this. You know what I mean? Like, I've read yeah. about these characters for, like, several hundred pages. If I'm going to be invested in anyone, like, it's going to be the two people who I've read an entire book about because no one else was in it. So I sort of feel like by going back to the start, even if it kind of gets to those same things, it's not going to be as related to Lilac and Tava. It's going to be related to these other couples. So questions about, like, how is Lilac dealing with the fact that she's not dead? And, you know, all of those things that Jen just said, they're not going to be addressed in the same way they could be if they just sort of continued on with this, if that makes sense. But I'm sure, like, eventually they'll kind of all end up at the same midpoint of, like, Lilac's dad is a creepy supervillain with an evil laugh and a very poor taste in names, you know, so I'm sure they'll get back there eventually, but I didn't know that before we started recording about the companion thing, so now I'm annoyed.
All right, so yeah, I don't know. So let's talk, because we kind of already got into it. We can talk about the story arcs and kind of how everything worked out. So they're on this planet that we don't know what it is. Nobody seems to know what it is. It's been terraformed, but it's been abandoned, which is highly unusual. Because if you're going to spend the money to terraform a planet, you usually have colonies there, is kind of the idea behind it. So this was terraformed, and for all intents and purposes, it was terraformed by Lilac's father, which they find out later. And considering he's, like, the biggest guy in terraforming and creating new planets, they weren't overly surprised by that. But they have this unusual moon, which is made of mirrors. Does anyone else, like, find that really odd, this whole kind of hovering mirror thing, which seems to be what pulled the Icarus out of hyperspace? So there was the kind of that aspect. And there was a part of me, as I was reading, I felt like maybe that mirrored moon was actually, like, people watching them. Like, they were under observation the whole time, like they were an experiment. That's what I thought, like, throughout most of the book, that this happened, but the two that survived were constantly being watched and monitored.
Yeah, I thought that too for a while.
I didn't think it was an experiment, but I did think, like, the first time they mentioned, like, oh, there's, like, these six points in the sky that look like a moon, I was like, oh, okay, so that's a camera, you know, that's observing this world for whatever reason. But I think that was probably the closest I came to anticipating, like, some kind of conspiracy. But at the same time, like, I don't know how hyperspace works, so this could be totally wrong, but, like,
I don't think it's real.
I know, but in the world of the book, suspend your disbelief, Marma. And if they have, like, if they have paths, right, through space and like, mm-hmm. roadways and whatever, wouldn't they know, or wouldn't they block off, like, hey, don't go here, bad place, not this way.
But nobody nobody knew that existed. That's the point. Only her father and the small group of people that he worked with knew that it existed. So, again, it leads to the question, did he send the Icarus there on purpose?
Well, I think also, I think, and this might be like other kind of mythology from other books coming in, but I'm pretty sure in this they said the way that the hyperspace in this book works is it's like the folding of space and reality. So maybe the way that it works is like you don't have a guaranteed sort of path. You know, you pass through like lots of different places, which was why when she was saying that they crashed, how would they know where they were? Because they could be kind of anywhere along this, I don't know, area or whatever. That's kind of the sense that I got, that it wasn't like a road in space. It was more like a, I don't know, like a shortcut where you sort of jumped around. But yeah. I mean, I have like the thing about like things like this, and I always just find this so funny, is they're talking about like, oh, there's no colonies on here and it's abandoned and everything. Like, seriously, how small is this planet that they are so sure that there isn't anyone like on the other side of the planet or whatever? Like, at the very most, they've crossed one country, you know, or like one landmass or whatever. But like, a planet is a sphere, and you could be on a different side of the planet and like not have seen the Icarus crashing. And I understand like they're setting it up so that there isn't anyone on there, but I always just find that so funny that they're like, oh, we've been to the top of this mountain and we can't see anyone, so there must not be anyone living here. Like, okay, guys, that's not how shapes work. But you know, whatever.
I kind of took like the fact that nobody, if nobody was at the Icarus in the like week or whatever that it took them to get there, then at least there's nobody within, you know, also presumably if this was terraformed and whatever, it's habitable. So I guess like you can extrapolate the reasonability of like, oh, there's nobody on the planet from, oh, there's nobody in this very wide area that would have seen the Icarus crash and go look at it.
Well, I mean, if a plane crashed in America, like, you wouldn't notice it from Australia. You know what I'm saying?
No, but so, if the moon crashed, you might, yeah. Like...
Yeah, but it wasn't... It was a plane. Anyway, I mean,
and the rotation is 26 hours, right? So does that mean that it's... that means it's bigger than Earth or smaller than Earth?
I have no idea. Okay. I'm an art student. Ask someone that knows about science. But I... So the going back to the mirrors, the... Does that end up being established, like, the mirrors are there to do with the voices and, like, the kind of beings that they are experimenting on or something? Or was that also unanswered?
No, I think, weren't the mirrors, like, a focal point for, like, the energy that was...
Yeah, like, that's what I thought.
Rift in time. Like, they were... That's what was focusing the rift and the opening in the rift to stay open and stuff.
Okay, cool.
That's what I thought.
Oh, so the terraforming reason was a red herring.
Yes.
Okay.
I believe so, at least, because that's what I think.
One detail I thought was really cool was when she mentioned that, like, the Icarus was actually built in space and it couldn't physically hold up on any kind of gravity, in any kind of gravity. I thought that was cool.
Although, you know, like, I'm very curious as to, like, how the Icarus crashed, like, from, like, how did the mirror moon thing make it crash? Like, I don't, like, do they just happen to, like, get too close to the atmosphere as they're passing through hyperspace and they're like, oh, nope.
Yeah, the gravitational pull is what, from what I gather, it got too close and the gravitational pull pulled it into the atmosphere. And as she just pointed out, it was built in space because it can't handle Earth's gravity or any kind of gravity. It's not used to that. It's meant to be only in space. And because it's big enough to hold 50,000 people, that's massive if you think about it.
But would something had to have, like, pulled it out of hyperspace first?
That's what I was thinking.
I think it passed too close to the planet.
Because we still don't have any answers.
Could have been the aliens that did it. The aliens could have somehow managed to make it work. The ones that were trapped there.
True.
Because their energy, their life form is pure energy. So they could have had something to do with it to help them get free, and that's why they pulled them down.
Maybe
there.
The ship passed through, like, the mirror moon was, like, focusing a beam of, like, a rift in space and time and stuff, and the ship passed through it, and it's like, oh, nope, got caught, and now I'm coming down.
Because we still don't have any answers about that old guy that was trying to talk to Lilac, right? And so I feel like there's something going on there where, like, he knew something was going to go wrong. So that's why I thought maybe something pulled him out of hyperspace first, and then they just happened to be near the mirror moon and the planet.
See, I didn't think so. I thought that, like, once we heard what he was saying, like, oh, yeah, the colonists need help, that was more just, like, a world-building detail.
That's especially totally since... possible, because honestly, I don't even remember what he said or if, like, we know what he said, so I could
just... Yeah, he was asking Lilac to talk to her father because, like, the colonists need help. And, like, basically, the world that they've created is that, like, the people who live on a planet are, like, colonists, and the people who live in space are, like, the rich, super-duper people, and, like, and he wanted Lilac's... I think, the people who live, like... If you live on a star or like a shiny star like Lilac does, then you're rich. But if you live on a planet like kind of like Earth, then you're a colonist. At least that's what I got from it.
I thought it was just kind of like newer planets. I mean, because presumably most of these people at some point were colonists if they live in a different galaxy than we do. So I kind of thought that, I mean, you could totally be right, but my impression was that, like, just the people on the newer planets who are going and settling are probably not being treated very well, are the ones who are considered, you know, lower class and whatever, and so they rebel. Even though they're, I mean, it wouldn't make sense really for there to be, like, that planet that is not called Coruscant, but it felt like it was to me. That she keeps talking about, right? So that was, like, her home base. Seems unlikely that there isn't a lower class element there, but could be wrong.
Can we talk about the creepy aliens that can bring people back to life?
Yeah, and how they project voices and images to people.
Yeah,
that was pretty so cool. Weird.
Yeah.
That was very cool. I want to know more about them. Spin-off.
Yeah, that's, like, the part in the book that, like, totally got me surprised. And I'm like, wait, what? Because before I was reading it, I was like, oh, this is, like, cool. Like, they're stranded, now they have to find their way. Oh, and now she's hallucinating, but she's not hallucinating. And I love that, like, that whole idea of, like, aliens being made out of matter or, like, being able to control matter and energy. That was so awesome.
Yeah, the bit where she knew who the people were that he had buried, that was the bit where you were like, oh, damn, like, what is happening here?
Yeah, that was
really, really cool. I really enjoyed that, because at first you think she is just gone crazy. Like, you're like, oh, no, sweetie, it was too much. You just can't take it again, you.
Oh, lie down.
Oh, it'll be okay. But yeah, so when you get to the point where it's like, oh, no, what just happened? And then when they come around the bend and he sees his family's home in the meadow, you're like, uh-oh. It's not just her now. So I love that element of it. I thought that was really unique and different and enjoyable, so I'm glad that they incorporated that in some way. And then we get to the part where they kind of give them what they need to survive. So you have the moment when Tarver's really, really, like, basically on his deathbed because he's infected. And in order to keep her moving, they project the flower that he had given her and recreate it for her to keep her moving forward. And then later on, we get the really big one where they basically recreate Lilac because she's died. So it's really interesting how they did that and how they knew how to do that in order to keep them alive so that they could get the help that they needed. So I thought that was a really cool element to the story. I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, I think they were my favorite element of the whole thing. And also the bit where she goes and digs up her own grave. Like, talk about morbid.
Right.
You know what I mean? And the whole time you're doing it, you're kind of wondering, like, is there going to be a body in there? Like, what's happening? And then he says, like, he can see the red hair in the grave, and you're like, oh, creepy.
This is so up my alley.
But I want to know more about it. You know, like, these things, that's fine, but... I always want to know more. Like, I feel like if you do something like that, you have to give a reason for how it works. And as far as I can see, like, her continuing existence is like, oh, they jumped through this door and now she's alive like she was before, which I am if that's the end of it and there isn't any like fallout from her being dead and then coming back as like this weird clone and then being herself, I don't know, then I'll be, yeah, I think there needs to be more of that, but I don't know if we'll get that in the other books. But like the whole idea of the aliens was very cool.
I think
there are anomalies in her medical exam, whatever that means.
Right, yeah. But I want to know why. Tell me how it works, you know?
Yeah, well, I almost wonder if that'll be throughout kind of the thing, because they came from somewhere, obviously, and they're obviously very powerful, and it's something that LaRue is very much interested in. So I'm wondering if they'll kind of play a part as they continue to go through these, you know, these colonies, as we hit these new couples, if the backing of it's always going to be these kind of really cool aliens, that these higher life forms that are intelligent and capable of replicating things that shouldn't be replicated, that are dead and gone, and then they can bring them back and bring them back consistently. So I'm almost wondering if he's still searching for that. Do you know what I mean? If that's the whole point of the rest of the stories, is as we move through this, he is the common enemy, and the goal is to get these these life forms that are pure energy. So if that's how it's going to kind of weave itself in, because that's my biggest thing. Like, I had all these questions about, okay, well, is she really dead? Is she going to get sick? Like, is it going to hold forever? Are they going to have to find them again so that they can, like, re-energize her? Like, how is that going to work? And then I found out it wasn't really going to be about them again. I was like, wait a minute. What?
Yeah. So,
yeah, I don't know, because I don't feel like it was enough just to hop into their energy and be like surged with it. Like, I feel like that at some point would wear off, but that's just me.
Yeah, but also, I was going to say, like, I think they're too cool that they won't appear again. You know, like, it's such a cool idea. It's such a cool concept that they thought of these aliens. So I'm sure they will be back.
I feel like we needed some kind of, like, somewhat info dump, like when they jumped through the thing, like if they, you know, because they were in like the rift or whatever, right, at that point. So like if they could have had some kind of mental conversation with these people to explain something would have been helpful, like sort of the way that Tarver had the conversation with Alec.
I think with that conversation like that Tarver had with Alec, he was clearly like speaking to like these beings and stuff, and they're like, oh, we would give our life in exchange for hers if we could, but like there's nothing that we can do. And like there's like all these signs that are like, don't touch the rift, otherwise like your life will be at risk and it will collapse, like this blah blah blah. And so I think when they jumped through and like he jumped through with Lilac first, like, so she was that's what like happened in my head, like he took her body and then jumped through, so she hit it first. And so the forms died, and then their energy forms went into Lilac, which is why she's still alive, and she'll always be alive, because it was just a transfer of energy and life and stuff that went into Lilac. It was weird, because that part was really clear to me in my head, and I was like, oh, like, maybe it's just headcanon and not, like, actual canon, but, like, that's what happened in my head.
Yeah, I just need more explanation. And I think, like, personally for me, good sci-fi and good fantasy books work when there are still rules, you know, like they might not have the rules of like physics and stuff, but there are still rules about like how things work. You can't just do whatever you feel like doing, you know. So I would like to know more about how that all works and like how it will work for Lilac going forward now. So hopefully we'll see that in some of the future books.
I actually thought for a minute that she was actually pregnant and that was what the anomalies that they were talking about, and that they hadn't noticed that she was different, but I don't think that's the case.
Let's talk about the structure of the book, because the book was told from, first of all, it was told from a rotating point of view. So we had a Tarver Lilac kind of rotation in chapters, but we also had these like snippets of interview, and you know that it's Tarver being interviewed as we move through the story. And they're like maybe not even a page long. They're like maybe 20 sentences long at most. So did those things kind of inform what you thought you were going to read about next? Or what you had just read, did they kind of change how you were reading it? Because I found them really interesting. And I caught myself a couple times thinking, oh, well, they've told me something here, but when really they hadn't. So what did you guys think about that structure?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Yeah, same.
It was so, like, different and so cool. And First of all, it was just really funny because Tarver is so snarky, and you could tell that he was just really enjoying annoying the crap out of them. But it was a good way to kind of structure, like, what was about to happen. And you knew when he was like, oh, yeah, absolutely nothing weird happened, that something really weird was going to happen. And I kind of just enjoyed it because you knew that he had survived, but you didn't know necessarily what exactly, like, how he survived and what exactly happened after that. So you were kind of getting the future bit of the story in chunks as you were reading it as it was going on, kind of in the past, if that makes sense. But it was just, I've never really read a book like that before, and I thought it worked really well.
Yeah, I think, like, it really made you want to continue the story, and it also kind of got you kind of, like, invested into, like, Tarver's character, because, like, he's being interrogated by, like, this ass that's just, like, asking all these questions, and you're just like, what are you doing? Like, these people sound so mean and unpleasant, and, like, I want to figure out why they're interrogating him and what's going on, and I feel like it was a really good way to kind of keep you going throughout the book.
Yeah, I loved it. I think it was also just a really clever way to split up the different chapters, so it wasn't this continuous, like, back and forth between Tarver and Lilac, which books that are told from two perspectives often end up being. So it kind of gave you a break as the reader. And yeah, also, like, they were really funny, and it kind of made it so the entire book was like this flashback of getting to this point where Tarver is being interviewed, which is always, I always find that a really interesting device. So it was great.
Yeah, I liked it too. I thought it added a certain tension to the story, especially at points where, you know, where things were going badly, or maybe not going badly, but the new information that you got from that kind of implied that something had happened that you weren't aware of. I kind of liked when Tarver was, like, very clearly lying, like, you know, they were like, oh, did anything happen at this point? And he was like, you know, I cut my hand, no big deal. And then, like, you read it and it's like, yeah, he, like, basically almost died. Which, by the way, I was so annoyed, like, when he cut his hand and, like, they wrapped it up and I was like, no, no, antibiotic that shit, come on, like, on your hand, like, metal. I was very, like, you know, annoyed that they weren't taking care of it properly, but I guess they did have, you know, a huge spaceship to go through.
Okay, so...
I have a question, actually. Did you guys want to see more inside the crashed Icarus? Because I know I definitely did.
Yeah, I thought they were going to spend more time in there, and I completely understand why they didn't, considering all those people were rotting away, but I was really kind of looking forward to them exploring it more and maybe finding more answers in there.
Yeah, I mean, I know because we didn't get to see that much of the ship when it was afloat, so to speak. And I mean, I guess maybe this is my Kyle side coming out, but I wanted to see some of the slightly more morbid elements.
Yeah. Because,
like, this is, no, it's just such a, it's a, you know, a tragedy on such a colossal scale, but, like, I almost feel like there should have been bodies, like, everywhere. And I kind of, you know, I wanted to see them cope with that because, like, that's just...
Although I have to say, like, it, like, was so creepy and, like, also epic, the way, like, she fell and she landed on, like, a body, and it was just, like, ugh, like, I shuddered, and I loved it.
Yeah.
Sure, so weird.
Well, when she...
It was realistic,
she smelled
though.
That, and she was like, oh, I guess the food's rotting, is like, sweetheart, no.
Because, yeah, I agree. Like, I feel like there should have been more carnage, just realistically speaking. Like, if you're going into the ship, like, there's going to, like, if there are 50,000 people on that ship, then you're going to be seeing a lot more bodies than I feel like what she had seen.
Yeah.
Well, I think it depends, like, what sections of the ship she was in. You know, like, there wouldn't have been people everywhere. But I think I totally agree. I feel like we did get elements of that, but the bit that I didn't like was how they kind of skipped over it by switching to a Tava chapter and then saying like, oh, Lilac keeps coming and going and she's always carrying things and like she's just going back and forth. And then it's like 3 days later and you're like, what happened? What? Go back in the ship. Tell me about the stuff that happened in the ship, you know? So
yeah, exactly. Did she find her cousin's body? Does she?
Right.
Like, somebody she knows or whatever.
Yeah, it would have been more interesting to see more of that from her perspective because this is such a huge thing for her to deal with and she had to deal with it alone because he was so ill that I thought it was a shame that as a character, like she kind of didn't get a moment to do that.
Okay, so we've talked a little bit about the sequel speculation and the sequel is called The Shattered World. Yes, This Shattered World. And the synopsis for it is it's a companion novel set in the same galaxy as book one in the Starbound trilogy. 6 months after the events of These Broken Stars, the second book in the trilogy follows a new pair of star-crossed lovers, one a rebel fighting for his home, the other a soldier, her mission to eradicate the rebellion, facing down a powerful darkness hidden in the wilderness of a newly terraformed world. So. And then the tagline is, three worlds, three love stories, one enemy. So it makes me wonder what's hidden in this wilderness, much like the other wilderness that they just were in. So what do you guys think about that?
I think that makes me think that it's not like the same kind of, well, other than the fact that it would be kind of repetitive, but not the same aliens that we've seen this time is because if this is really important to LaRue, then first of all, why didn't he have, you know, like hide the planet, fine, but have people continue to work on it? Don't just like seal it off and keep it here. Like my impression was that he was just like, okay, this didn't work, so never mind. But also the fact that, you know, the whole planet was blown up, you know, so there's no evidence to compare it to. And, you know, whatever is going to happen, like only we as readers know. So, like, the people involved can't actively compare it. So I think it's got to be something new, probably.
I think I think it depends what you're looking for in this book, whether you'll be interested in this sequel or not. Like, personally for me, I'm not reading these books looking for a romance series. I'm not particularly interested in reading three books about three different sets of star-crossed lovers. Like one is more than enough for me. So as someone who is more interested in like the sci-fi aspect of the entire world and looking at those kind of bigger picture issues, this doesn't really draw me in. And it doesn't give me much indication that it's going to be following up on things from this first book. It kind of is like, okay, and now we're going to do it again. So you know, like there'll be a more detailed one, I'm sure, closer to the release date, which is like the end of this year, right? For this?
Yeah, December.
December.
Yeah, December.
So, right. So, I'm sure when that gets closer, there'll be more things. But like for me, as someone who's read this first book, and I think like other people would share this, I want to know how much it's going to be connected, you know, or if it's going to be like, yeah, like a series where there are a few crossover characters and like it kind of looks at similar issues, but you don't really get to see Lilac and Tava again and you don't really get to see like these creepy aliens again or whatever.
Oh, I bet that's Sarah.
I was just going to say that. Yeah. Going to say that because that would be a connection back to Tarver and that would be able to get him back into the story and bring Lilac with him.
You guys are so clever.
Yeah, but I still don't care. You know, you know what I mean? I don't know if anyone else shares that.
I felt really invested in this story and where it was going to go. So it is kind of hard for me to switch gears and think about having to invest in another set of characters.
Right, but I think they did the romance really well. So if you're interested in romance, and if you like read this and really enjoyed that aspect, I'm sure you'll really enjoy the other two. Exactly. Like that's just not what I'm looking for in this book.
Right.
That's sort of my take on it. Maybe this is just the optimist in me, but I really enjoyed the romance and just the book in general. So I'm looking forward to that and it being really well written in the second one. But I agree, like, this can't just be a carbon copy of the first one, romance-wise. I mean, it just, it would feel so repetitive, and I don't think that they would do that. So I'm really looking forward to a different kind of romance, and also adding to what we already know, like, what's already happened in the first book. And by the time the third book, the last one, rolls around, I just really want everything to sort of come together so seamlessly that you're like, whoa, you know, all of this kind of added up in the end. And I hope that they do it on that scale, that everything comes together and it feels really satisfying. But I know I'm definitely looking forward to the second one, but whether I'll look forward to the third one is really going to depend on how repetitive the story feels in the sequel.
I think what's interesting is that it's going to be, it has to be like a fundamentally different kind of book, in that, like, These Broken Stars is very, I mean, you read the synopsis and it's like, okay, Titanic plus lost in space, and that's not a bad thing. It's, you know, it's just that you can identify those elements very clearly. And this is actually, I think I totally forgot while I was reading, but I was like, oh, Lilac's gonna die because it's Titanic, but it's gonna be different. So I at some point I thought that and then forgot and was surprised when she died. But so I'm very curious how they're gonna play that into, you know, this new book that, like, because it's so catchy, you know, the concept of this book, how they're going to, like, carry that over into a new book with new characters and new people. So it's not just the characters, it's also the concept that interests me.
Yeah.
Or, like, how they're going to pitch it.
That totally makes sense. And I have to say, like, I don't think we talked about this that much, but, like, the writing in this book is really good. It's really well written. Yeah. And I'm curious to know, like, how they broke down the writing between the two, like, just as a kind of theoretical thing. I find that interesting when there's more than
what
one
they did,
author.
Well, they actually they explained how they wrote it when they announced the TV show. They the person was like, so it first started off as them emailing each other. It's just they kind of met on the internet. I don't know how they met on the internet, but they came up with a couple ideas, like, they wanted to write, and then they're like, wait, like, other people might enjoy the story too. And so basically they each picked a character and they'd read a chapter, and then one of them is in Australia and the other one is in America. And so when the one in Australia was sleeping, the one in America would, like, read over what the other one wrote, kind of, like, make her comments, and then send over her own chapter. And then they'd kind of, like, do this 24-hour exchange of, like, chapters and stuff.
Cool. Well, I think it worked really well. So
yeah, it really did.
It has that going for it.
Like, and it definitely...
No, go ahead.
You can totally write a novel with your internet friend if you have enough, like, focus.
Are you propositioning me to write a novel with you over the emails? Is that what's happening right now? The interwebs?
Yeah.
I'm just being annoying now. Continue.
Along the lines with the writing, I think it was really good. You couldn't tell that it was written by two separate people. You couldn't tell that there were two voices writing separate chapters. And sometimes when authors come together and they each write a character or each write alternating chapters, you can tell. In this case, I didn't think you could tell at all, which was fantastic. Because,
I mean, it was, yeah, sometimes it's good that you can tell. But in this case, it worked well that you couldn't.
Right, exactly. So yeah. I think that was really good. And you're right, the writing was really good. And Kyle brought up the TV show. So as we were planning all this earlier in this week, it came up that it had been optioned for TV by Eric Balfour, who is on Haven, I think it is, right now, on the Sci-Fi Network. And he's done some other things. But he optioned it, and he was really into it, which I thought was kind of interesting. And so they're looking to, you know, get a script going and to shop it around to some networks. So I think it'll be really interesting to see if this makes it. Right now on the CW, in a couple weeks, there is a pilot, or it's already pilot. It's a show coming on called Starcrossed, literally called Starcrossed. And it's about star-crossed lovers, one who is an alien and one who's a human girl, and her father happens to be, like, captain of the police force, et cetera, et cetera. So you kind of see the parallels here. And I've seen the pilot of Starcrossed, and just the idea of this book being made has so much more potential than the pilot of Starcrossed had. I am really excited. So I hope These Broken Stars has a shot because
the one
that's out there right now is not good.
I think, kind of can't see this working as a TV show.
I think it can work really well.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I feel like if they make a miniseries, it could totally work.
I think the way it would work is they would have to incorporate more flashback. Like, all the things that we wanted in the book, we could get in the show.
Mm. Yeah, it would have to be hugely expanded.
Right.
That's fine.
Unless they had, like, all three stories happening at the same time on different planets, which would be a little risky, but could potentially be interesting.
That would be intense.
Yeah.
They couldn't do that for another 3 to 4 years, though.
Right.
Well, this is TV development. It doesn't go that fast.
Oh, it can. It depends what it is. But that's why I'm thinking if they expanded and gave us, like, the things that we said we really wanted to see more of, or the things that were just touched upon in passing, we could get the whole backstory of Simon and Lilac. We could see more of Lilac's father and just, you know, what he was up to. We could have with the interview concept, we could have more of that play throughout, and that would give them, you know, a season's worth of shows with more than just these two people, because I mean, yeah, the book is based on two, but you can easily expand that world to include all of these things that we have questions about that aren't answered in the book.
Yeah, that makes sense, but like at the end of the day, it's still a show about two people trapped on a planet by themselves, you know what I mean? And personally for me, like, I would not be interested in watching that, because even if they have all of the other aspects, like, you have to come back to this central point. So if they're going to make this work, I feel like they must introduce, like, I don't know, there must be more people around or something, because just for like the interest of the viewers, they're not going to watch the same two people be like, oh, my shoe broke, or like, oh, now we have to find water again, and now you have to make camp again. You know, like, that's not so interesting to me. Oh, I have to say, it's very funny to me that in the article they're talking about, like, their dream cast, and I, like, the authors are talking about it, and I just was, like, skimming through it, and I saw them mention Chris Pine, who is, like, 35 years old to play Tava. So,
oh, I know.
It doesn't matter. It's the CW.
That's fine. Yeah, right.
If I was taller,
depending,
like,
when this is... Right, depending when this is made, though, it's going to be like a 45-year-old. They're going to be like the middle-aged Lilac and Tava, like, crashed.
Yeah, I just got out of the academy.
Oh, man. Anyway, I'll be interested to see how it turns out. I think it will need a lot more embellishment from the book, because I just don't think the book has enough to interest a viewer, like, watching every week. And it depends how many episodes they're going for as well, I suppose.
When Lilac mentioned Simon, did anyone else think of Simon from Firefly?
Of course.
Or is that just me? Oh, okay.
Duh. All
right.
I thought of the Mortal Instruments. I really wish I had thought of Firefly.
Karen.
Sorry.
Okay, so we had a couple comments on Twitter about the novel. Some of you guys have read as well. So Eden Jean says, is the planet Earth? Did you guys think as you were reading initially that it was planet Earth? Because I most certainly had questions about that.
I definitely did, especially when they talked about the line. They don't ever bring, like, huge cats to new terraform planets. I thought that's what made me think it was Earth, actually.
It's funny because at first I definitely, like, it didn't even occur to me, but as soon as we started getting things about the aliens or whatever, I kept thinking, and I don't know if this would even make any sort of sense, but I kept having, like, Doctor Who flashbacks and thinking that those aliens were actually, like, the remnants of humans, like, from Earth a long, long time ago, like, almost like the last human, like Cassandra. And I don't even know if that would be a possibility, but that would be a cool twist.
Cassandra with a, like, moisture spray. Yeah.
But see, like, she's just disappeared entirely, and now she's just, like, a floating consciousness.
That's amazing. I love that. I never really thought about it being Earth, but I guess it makes sense.
Do you think that the cat was actually real, or that the beings made the cat in order for Tara to go back and get to get Lilac?
Oh, yes. Now I do.
Mind blown.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Especially, that makes so much sense because they never encountered another one, and they never
exactly. They never encountered anything.
It made her run, like, straight at him. That's what he said. If he had Oh, Jen, you're so smart.
That makes so much sense.
Did you guys realize that the password was going to be lilac?
That was my least favorite thing. The universe makes his daughter's name the password. Like, come on,
because
dude.
He's a cartoon villain. Like, he's busy practicing his evil villain laugh. Oh, father is a bad
mustache twirl.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
The reason he doesn't have a cat yet is because, like, none of them have been good enough, so he just, like, tries them out, strokes them for a couple minutes, and then has them killed.
Right. Oh, my goodness. I sincerely hope he has a mustache.
All right. Let's see. Stephanie Williams also had a comment on Twitter. She said, did Lilac handle her father too easily at the end? I felt there should have been more of a cliffhanger for them. Well, we clearly know why there wasn't a cliffhanger for them, because it's not going to be them in the next story.
Yeah.
But I did feel like it all just smoothed over way too easily. Like, it was too easy. And that's what made me think that there would be more to learn about in the next story. And the fact that he blew up the planet.
Yeah, okay.
That's what threw me more than anything, was that they destroyed it. So I was thinking that, oh, he's destroyed the planet. Now he's got the upper hand again. So how is this going to go forward? Yeah, that was where I was with that.
But now, I was like, oh, Lilac and Tumor freak out now because you have no evidence. And, like, this was the only thing that you were leveraging against, you know, his allowing you guys to, like, live together forever perfectly. And, you know, now that's completely gone. And, I mean, it was kind of an iffy thing anyway, because, like, this planet that's, like, hidden in this pocket of space, but fine, okay, it works. But then, like, right, so it's all destroyed, and now it's literally just, like, the angry daughter who's been swept away by the weird, like, low-born captain person, like, her angry tantrums against her father's, like, word. And, if I were him, I would have, like, sent in troops right away and been like, okay, Tarver, you're either dead or in jail. Lilac, you're being sent to some kind of mental institution or whatever. If that's what, like, he's capable of, like, that's what I was honestly expecting to happen. And no, we got a pretty explosion, though.
I mean, there was a little bit of Mockingjay to the end of this book where it was like, oh, we only have 20 pages left. Like, quick. So someone write an ending, you know, it could have done with another, another 50 pages or something, maybe, just to kind of expand on that a little bit more, and especially when we know that this is it, we're not getting these characters again. So, yeah, I totally agree with you, though, Jen. As soon as he blew up the planet, I was like, oh, game over. Like, he wins. But apparently not. So,
well, the only thing that I can think of is that genetically there's something different about her, and they all know it. Everyone on that ship knows it because they've been running tests, even though he wasn't expecting that. So they do have some proof that something's happened to her, and they could prove that she's somehow changed and been altered, but I don't know if that's enough. So we'll see.
Yeah, I didn't feel like that was enough, because they were saying it wasn't, like, she was different, but they couldn't work out, you know, what it was. So, yeah, that's a bit different to being like, hey, there's a creepy planet over here, and, like, they're running weird tests on that, versus, like, guys, my blood sample came back and it was weird, you know?
Yeah, no,
it's not quite the newspaper.
Yeah, that's a really dramatic press conference right there.
Right, I was going to say, yeah. It's not quite the, like, grabbing headline that she would be after.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't know where it's all going to head, but I'm curious to find out. I almost wonder if it'll be a little bit like the Lunar Chronicles, which Marissa Mayer is writing. So, like, each one kind of has elements of different characters in it that are focal points, but you always have the same set throughout. So you have the same endpoint and story arc, kind of. The overarching story arc is going towards one final purpose, where is each book is to different characters highlighted, but you still have majority of the characters in them, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm very curious to see how this goes with the second book. I feel like we just don't know enough about it, but I have a lot of questions. We all seem to have a lot of questions, so...
So that wraps up our discussion of These Broken Stars. Of course, if you've read the novels, please feel free to chime in on any of your thoughts, questions, because, you know, we have a bunch of them. If you have answers to our questions, even better, we'd love to hear them. So please make sure you leave those in the comments. As always, thank you guys for listening, and we will be back next week with a new episode again. So we only took 1 week off. So we will talk to you again soon, and until then, I'm Jen.
I'm Karen.
I'm Kyle.
I'm Marima.
And I'm Mikal.
Bye, guys!